It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 113 of Sports Day Plus. In mere seconds, I'm spending the hour with my friend Kevin Dunn. Going to try and talk some sports. We're going to get into some other stuff as well, including a few observations that I've had going back to the weekend involving gambling jumping the shark and a sign that we are not in a good place athletically as a people in 2024. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. And Kevin Dunn 01 is where you can find my guy KD, who joins me now and typically on Tuesdays. What's up, Kevin? How are we doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I am good. Got through a wedding this weekend, went to my kids' field day yesterday, and there were some interesting things that happened at each of those events that I thought was worth us talking about, because you and I are libertarian in a lot of ways. That is, we want to give people the freedom to decide for themselves. And I don't want to speak for you, but for me, that does extend to sports gambling. Legalizing sports gambling just seems like the right thing to do, to bring something that could be happening in the shadows above board, to try and place a proper set of rules in place, but also to properly educate people versus demonizing something. But I also feel like we're getting to a point with legalized gambling, with how easy it's become because of our cell phones, that it's getting into a place that is overall going to be bad for society going forward.
Ideally, I would like any of that stuff to be legal, and it's definitely happening underground, as you talk about. So, I mean, it's not one of those things that is going to go away. So maybe try and legalize it and clean it up as much as possible. But you're right, with technology, it's just so available now. I mean, it's not like drugs or alcohol where there's some effort to actually go get it. This is almost like bad food or sugar. I mean, it's everywhere and it's 24/7 in your life right in front of you.
And not just that, but what we're able to gamble on has become somewhat amusing. I remember you and I had a colleague back in the day when we were doing things at the Zone. And this guy, because his wife was interested in the show and he had a couple of young daughters who liked the show, was placing money on American Idol just to make it more entertaining for himself. I've got other friends who will literally bet on WNBA games or sporting events that they normally don't care about just to have some sort of emotional investment in what it is that they're choosing to watch for the night. And so I got to experience that personally on Saturday when I learned that through some app that I had to download on my phone, I could actually bet on like 20 different things having to do with this wedding. And you put a $10 ante into the overall betting pool. I think half of it goes to the bride and groom for their honeymoon fund, and the other half goes to the person who picks the most things correctly. And here's the kicker. It actually made the wedding infinitely more enjoyable for me than it would have been otherwise. Now, this is one of my good friends who is getting married. I like his bride. Whether or not they make it long term is anybody's guess. That's the case with, 50% of marriages in this country. But it was a fun time. It was even more fun, and I was paying attention in moments where I probably wouldn't have otherwise, namely the ceremony, because I did have the tiniest bit of scratch on the line.
Wow, that says a lot about where we've come. Yeah, I was about to say, I mean, the biggest bet would be the long-term bet, which that's probably the only gambling I've ever done, quiet gambling at a wedding, is does the marriage make it, 5 years or 10 years? But obviously, you've got a time stamp on that. So, yeah, that says a lot. I think Korean baseball, when people were betting on that, the pandemic really exposed a lot. But people, because there wasn't American sports going on, and people were gambling on Korean baseball. And I thought, okay, at that point, that's a problem.
Exactly. And so I ended up going 13-7 in my bet. So I did pretty well. It wasn't good enough to win. But do you want to hear what some of the questions were that I had to bet on?
Absolutely.
So, started with who will cry first. That was easy money that the groom would cry first. He cried when she was walking down the aisle. Will the official make a comment about cell phones in words of welcome? Will the couple-to-be write and recite their own vows? How long will the ceremony be? It eventually does accelerate to things like who will puke first, somebody in the bride's party or somebody in the groom's party? How many total times will the word love be said in the vows? A lot of these are pretty standard. Conga line. Will parents of the bride and or groom take any shots? That definitely happened. Will hot dogs be consumed at the wedding? The groom is a big hot dog guy. Biggest hot dog person I know outside of kids. This dude likes hot dogs more than any adult should, and there weren't actually any hot dogs that were served at this wedding, but cigars were smoked, and that was one of the questions too.
By the way, you don't hear that a lot. You don't hear he's a big hot dog guy as an adult. You're right. I mean, I know people that I'm fine with hot dogs. Go to a ball game, get a hot dog, but unless it's like Hot Dogs in Chicago, which is RIP now gone, I'm not searching out hot dogs.
Yeah, it's a situational food. It really is. It's a ballpark thing. Maybe you go to San Francisco, you have a hot dog. Hot dogs, it does still exist, I believe, at Wrigley Field. It's not like the original location that you and I used to go to when you would come visit me in Chicago, drink up. But hot dogs are not just a few food that you're necessarily going to eat at any time, except if you're this dude. He literally got a Christmas present this year that was like a hot dog warmer and bun warmer. And it's all he can talk about. You go over to his place, he's like, anybody want a hot dog? It's like, no. I don't want a hot dog. I want you to stop asking me if I want a hot dog too. It is a vile thought unless you're in one of those very specific situations.
I know the guy you're talking about. He's a good guy. I didn't realize he's a hot dog guy, but he's also a different bird, so it didn't totally shock me.
So that story, or that anecdote, I should say, is in cahoots with a national news story that Dave & Buster's, which is apparently seeing a huge resurgence over the last couple of years, is about to start allowing gambling with its video games and with its games that it offers up at all the locations across the country, including the one here in Austin off of Mopac 183. I guess it's not that big of a stretch if you're talking about people already gambling on sports and reality television, but do we really need gambling on video games to make those video games entertaining? I mean, do I need to be putting $10 down on skee ball going up against the person next to me or pop a shot? Or the airplane simulator, or Mario Kart, or whatever other freaking video games exist at Dave & Buster's now?
No, not at all. That's going too far. I mean, obviously, at a place like that, you can be having fun. But, I mean, I see all the gambling on people that already have an addiction with video games. It's like just doubling up on addictions. And like you said, I mean, you and I are pretty libertarian and stuff like that. But, yeah, it does seem, I'm just kind of curious where this all goes.
I think Pandora's box is open at this point, so I don't think it goes anywhere except getting more excessive and more in our face. And I think that's why it probably speaks to an importance of learning to unplug from a lot of this stuff from time to time, because otherwise it just becomes this thing that you're accustomed to staring at and these buttons that you're accustomed to pressing, and occasionally you win. But when it comes to gambling, I mean, there are some exceptions, but far more people lose than win.
Yeah, I think just putting it down and unplugging in general. I mean, you know, I do that. I try and do that once a weekend. I mean, not always, like, I can't always do that. But when I can, I mean, I'll take the whole day and just turn my phone off. And it's good to unplug. I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone of getting too caught up in my phone with work or personal stuff or whatever. But it's just, I mean, we're connected to so many devices now that you've got to disconnect. I think the phone's probably the toughest one.
Phone is difficult. Television can be difficult. Computer's difficult for me, but I do a lot of work on my computer. So it's just one of those things where you want to find that proper balance. And a lot of people have lost that grasp on moderation. It is good to step away from things that you enjoy doing to prove that you're stronger than the vice. And for a society that is pretty codependent on their technology now, I think a lot of people would benefit if they were to choose to do something like that. He is Kevin Dunn joining me for the whole hour here on Sports Day Plus. Coming up, we'll get into an observation that I made at my kids' field day yesterday. And yeah, we're going to talk some sports as well eventually here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Kevin Dunn here on Sports Day Plus. The plan going forward is to have him join me on Tuesdays. Sometimes the conversation will be very sporty. Oftentimes it will not. You can never totally predict where we are going to head. But we are going to talk sports a little bit this segment, Kevin, because there's some things going on in baseball right now of interest, starting with a guy who for a long time has been looked at as one of the premier players in the game, suffering another injury that's going to keep him out for multiple weeks. Man, it stinks that Mike Trout, for seemingly half a decade now, has not been able to stay on the field for the Angels.
Yeah, I mean, you take out 2022 when he played 119 games, you'd have to go back to 2019 and 2018 when he really played the majority of the season. And he's a generational talent. I mean, obviously he's been on a bad team, but still, it's just, you know, baseball needs him out there. And the fact that he's been missing so much of the year, it just makes me wonder. I mean, you know, there's an epidemic with pitchers right now that are getting injured, and too many of the premier pitchers are on the IL. But I think we know partially, at least, velocity, stress they're putting on their elbow, their arm, or their body. But for guys that are like are in the shape like Trout, I mean, Mike Trout's not John Kruk. Mike Trout looks like he could have played college football the way he's built. You're always into new science and new training and stuff like that. Seemingly, these guys aren't living the life of the Mantles of the world, and their bodies would be conditioned position players to be able to deal with it. Are they wound too tight? Are they in too good a shape?
Too good of a shape can be a thing, especially if you are not putting enough of an emphasis on mobility stuff, or the type of training doesn't include certain explosive movements that you will be taking part in when the games are actually going down. But that would shock me if a guy like Mike Trout was neglecting those things. Sometimes right. It's as simple as a guy being too muscular and not having the proper amount of padding for what his body needs to withstand the rigors of playing a professional sport. One of my favorite examples over time from that is another baseball guy, Reggie Sanders. You remember Reggie Sanders, the bragging point with Reggie Sanders back in, what, the 1990s was, he's got 4% body fat. Yeah, the issue with that, though, is that your tendons, ligaments, and muscles, they need a little bit of give. And when you're that tightly wound, to the term that you just used, it's going to be problematic. And Reggie Sanders had a really hard time staying healthy when he was looked at as a guy who was a day-in, day-out player in the lineup for whatever team he was with at that given point in time.
Man, I hadn't thought of Reggie Sanders, the Reds, in a long time. That's a really good example. Yeah, because he was one of those guys that was in really good shape and was really cut up at that time. I mean, the other thing, too, is that I can even understand a lot of these guys going out during the steroid era. I'm probably trusting the wrong group in terms of Major League Baseball, but it seems like they've got a handle on that, or at least taking it seriously, that I just kind of wonder what it is. But, yeah, I mean, people kind of mentioned that about Jordan Whittington. Remember, his brother was a workout freak, and that he was having these core issues and injuries, and that maybe he was almost wound too tight.
Yeah, it wasn't just that. It was the type of lifts that he was having Jordan do when Jordan was a high schooler and his body was still developing. It just leaves you more prone to injury. You have to do these things perfectly, and even doing them perfectly sometimes leads to these aches and pains. For instance, now this isn't necessarily an Olympic lift or a power lift here, but I was doing basic RDLs at the gym earlier today. And on one rep, and I was doing lighter weight, I was doing a warm-up weight before getting to heavier weight, I felt something go in my back. And it's like, ah, damn it, here we go. And is my back sore right now? Am I limping around a little bit like an old guy? Yeah. But it's sometimes, sadly, that simple, even for somebody who's in pretty good shape. And so I'm really happy for Jordan that between Tori Becton and the other strength and conditioning folks at the UT program, that he was able to play a majority of games over these last couple of years and really give himself a shot as a professional football player too. But it took them, 3 years to get his body to a point finally where it wasn't breaking down after playing a handful of games in the fall.
Yeah, no, I mean, it took towards the very end. I still think that probably hurt him in the draft. Just the injury pass and all that. So I don't know. It's I was watching Walker Buehler last night for the Dodgers. He had not been on the mound in pretty much 2 years. And he's added weight, added strength. His lower half is always really strong to his upper half to try, because he's had two Tommy John surgeries now. So some of these guys, I mean, as young as Walker Buehler, already have two TJs. And I mean, how many more times can you do that? And I mean, it also begs the question about Ohtani. Like, the Dodgers spent all that money, and the way he's hitting right now, you could argue that it's worth it just with his bat. And he apparently is a pretty good right fielder, so he could always go out there. He can fly. And we know he has a gun. But you want him to pitch. And if he has one more arm injury, I mean, there's a question around the baseball circles is, do you just pull him? I mean, or do you turn him into a closer and a guy who only closes from May on, you know? I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, obviously Ohtani is a little bit different and you've got some insurance. I don't think he'd pay what the Dodgers paid, but you have some insurance if he never pitches for them at all. But some of these guys are, Spencer Strider's a good example. I think he's had now two Tommy John surgeries, one at Clemson and one here. So, or one in the big leagues. So, you know, you get the two of those and I mean, can you do three? Can you do four? Where is this going and how does Major League Baseball legislate anything if they do to try and curb this problem? Because it is a problem and it's obvious.
What was Walker Buehler's velocity last night?
He hit 90. I want to say he may have touched 98 once.
Wow.
But he hit 97 a couple of times. I think his average four seamer was 96.
Good Lord, man. To still be throwing. I mean, that just speaks to how much medicine has evolved and the ability to deal with that sort of serious injury, that a guy can go through that twice, not having pitched in a couple of years and still get out there and pump it like that. My goodness.
Yeah, I think they were smart to really build up around, you know, his arms are bigger, his upper body is bigger, and to try and build around that to obviously try and give it some padding and a little bit of structure. But yeah, no, it is pretty impressive. I mean, it's amazing where all this has gone. I mean, a lot of guys end up throwing harder. I don't know if they do after a second Tommy John, but clearly he's an example of his velocity still there. And who knows, he may have more in there as he kind of gets back into it.
Before I hit record on segment two, I mentioned a story to you also from Major League Baseball that is pretty curious. You are somebody for a long time now has said that the baseball system is extremely healthy. Starts in the high school ranks, select ball, of course, but college baseball is in a really good place right now. And as a result, it helps Major League Baseball out too. Think college football to pro football versus the shape that college basketball in and how little it seems to help the NBA most years. Well, Major League Baseball is actually sending a warning to its teams about encouraging high school players to withdraw from their high school baseball teams in order to become eligible to sign as an international player instead of having to wait for the MLB amateur draft. And look, sports does this, and baseball is maybe the best example of finding ways to skirt the rules to win, but that is a dangerous path that teams are really starting to try and do this. So good for Major League Baseball for getting out in front of it and not letting Major League Baseball do a serious disservice to itself.
Yeah, that's sad. I mean, it's so competitive that happens in any sport. If they can find a way to skirt the rules, they will. But when you're messing with kids and messing with the feeder system, that's just awful. And I hope they can find out who some of these people are. And that's one of those that I have no problem if they end up getting banned from baseball. I know that sounds extreme, but or penalized in some way with the suspension, because that's it's wrong, and you should care about the sport. I understand you care about your job and doing well, but who's to say you're going to get that kid anyway if he does go back to him?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And the league sent a memo to all the teams, and it says that encouraging players to make this change, quote, shall be subject to significant penalties, including but not limited to the denial of player selection rights under the MLB draft or loss of benefits under the International Amateur Talent System. So we will continue to keep an eye on this one. There is one example that's cited in the ESPN article that I'm reading right now. We're not going to get into that right now, though, but something to keep in mind as we approach the MLB draft, which is in, what, just a month and a half now, right? It happens during the College World Series.
Yeah, I never thought there'd be a day where I watch a Major League Baseball game and know more guys who went to college than an NBA playoff game. But that is where I'm at now in 2024.
Yes, it is. Speaking of college baseball, the Texas baseball team continues to find ways to win games and win series. And they did so again this last weekend, beating Oklahoma State. That makes two weekends in a row that they take on the Oklahoma teams, who are the top two teams in the Big 12 standings. And Texas, whose season for much of the year has felt like it was teetering on the brink, all of a sudden find themselves in a pretty decent position down the stretch of this 2024 college baseball year, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, decent for at least where they were. I mean, it's not going to go down as one of the memorable regular seasons, at least not like in a, you know, dominant fashion like some of them they've had. But give them credit, man. I mean, the team is likable, especially the roster. They've done everything they can with the pitching. I think they need a pitching coach. I think they need to reevaluate how they're getting pitching. I think NIL needs to step up. There are a lot of things there. But this is kind of what they've been like under Pierce. There have been a lot of seasons that felt like they're falling apart, and they are able to salvage it. Now, I think it's easier this year because I don't remember a Big 12 being this down. I don't remember a Big 12 in football or baseball being this down.
Yeah, football is definitely down. I default to you on the baseball thing, but the Longhorns are tied for second right now with Oklahoma State and West Virginia at 15-9 behind OU, who is 18-6. And of course, the Longhorns do have the tiebreaker there after taking 2 of 3 from the Sooners just a couple weekends ago. He is Kevin Dunn joining me here for the full hour on Sports Day Plus. Coming up next, we'll get into sports or maybe something else. You'll just have to stay tuned to find out.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for segment 3 of 4 with my friend Kevin Dunn. You can find him on Twitter at KevinDunn01. You can check me out on Twitter at Courtesy Wave. And 1027 ESPN can be found at 1027 ESPN. Kevin, I was at my kids' field day yesterday at Rick Perry Elementary School up here in Cedar Park. You have any memories of field days from your childhood at the elementary schools that you attended?
Not really. I mean, field days, that's where you just do a bunch of different activities, right? Like almost like your own Olympics.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's catered to kids. There's some water stuff. You're trying to throw a ball or kick a soccer ball into certain targets that go into one of the soccer goals, and they're throwing water balloons at teachers or high school students who are volunteering for the day, and then there's a couple of other things as well. It's pretty innocuous. The kids have a lot of fun because they get wet when they're supposed to normally be learning. That's pretty cool, and they have a bounce house set up in the PE gym, and overall, it's a fun time. Parents can come and root their kids on and just hang out for a little bit, which is what I chose to do, not only to support my kids, but also just to take a general look at where we are as a society in terms of our youth, in terms of our elementary school-aged youth.
Yeah, I do remember kind of like those field days. I remember one we had in elementary school where we went to the high school stadium and had like our own Olympics, and it was combining both elementary schools, so there were a lot of kids there. And one memory I have is I thought I was going to win the long jump because I could jump, and it was like one of those first deals where you run into someone who's just more talented than you are at something. And it was, you know, not because it's not like at that age we had ever competed in the long jump against each other, right? Maybe you kind of did goofing off outside, but we did it, and I finished second, which is pretty good out of all those kids. But I came home crying, and I was just like distraught that I had not won the gold in the long jump. And of course, the guy that ended up winning it ended up becoming a good friend and was just always more athletic, like was always longer, taller, could always jump more. So I'm like, yeah, that totally made sense that he was better then and better in high school too.
Yeah, I see that with my kids' sports sometimes. It's like, oh wow, this kid is just clearly faster than everybody else. Like you could do sprint training with some of these other kids to get them faster. Just natural God-given ability. This kid is going to blow everybody else out of the water. But there is also a basic level of coordination that I see falling by the wayside way too hard, at least at Rick Perry Elementary School's field day involving second and third graders. I cannot tell you the percentage of kids who are stepping right foot to throw right-handed or left foot to throw left-handed, other than to say that it's well over 50% of kids that I saw trying to throw something.
That is, yeah, that's not good. You got to have your kids doing that. And I'll say this for, even for, especially for guys. You and I think probably had a baseball in our hand or a football in our hand at three. So our parents and dads specifically were not going to let that happen. But for guys, you may be the artsiest, non-athletic, don't care about sports, don't worry, I'm going to go make, you know, create a company and sell it. I'll be loaded. Not going to worry. I'll find a woman. You know, I'm into art. I'm into this. I've got a lot more to bring than sports. Learn how to throw a baseball or football. Just learn, like Trey said, the right step, because there's going to be some point where y'all are together and you're at some function and you've got to throw an object, and she's never going to look at you the same if you throw it like 50 Cent a first pitch.
Yeah, it's that
simple. You know what I mean?
Learn how to throw a ball. It's very easy. Learn how to swing a bat, too. You don't need to be able to hit. Yeah. Just learn how to swing to not look completely awkward doing so. It's going to save you a lifetime of being made fun of.
Yeah, right. And I'm saying just learn just the basics. You know, I mean, it'd be like something where you and I, if we're going to a finishing school, or a finishing class. I mean, you know, let's just get the basic cutlery down. I'm not going to be Queen of England here, but let me just make sure I'm not a total rube, you know, and completely made fun of whenever this thing happens. It's like anything that you may not be good at or have never done. You know, there, unfortunately, there's something, not on this case, there's some things in society that you just need to have a little bit of a grasp on, and then you don't have to worry about it. But yeah, I've seen that. I mean, I feel like there's, you know, an influx of pigeon toe people too. I feel like that somewhere in the generation, like I just see a lot more pigeon toe people. In fact, I'm even suspicious of some of these young hipsters that are out that are faking it to look, to kind of fit in or accentuating it a little bit more.
What an embarrassing thing to try and fake to fit in, being pigeon toed.
Yeah. And what an embarrassing admission by me that my life's so boring now that I am walking around society suspicious that people are faking that. No, it's one of those. It was more where I live. There are a lot of older people now, or people my age. But for a little while, when I first moved here, there were a lot of like grad students and people, more young professionals. And I just saw a lot of it. And I saw it in New York too. And I was like, man, I just don't remember that many pigeon-toed people. I mean, I could probably name the people that I even played sports with growing up that were like that. And I just feel like I've seen a lot of it. I don't know. That'd be a good scientific study trick. I mean, I know kids are fatter now. I mean, that's the one thing you could have told me, that kids are a lot fatter at that field day than they were when we were kids.
Yeah, but I feel like fat leads to diabetes knees, which leads to your feet splaying out a little bit more than in. Like a tiny bit of pigeon toe may make evolutionary sense just because you're pushing off of your big toe. But to go as pigeon toed is what you're talking about. I think it probably speaks to people who didn't play any sports or didn't have to learn how to run as kids. And so that's just that form their natural gait sadly took over time.
That may be some of it. No, I mean, it feels like, you know, Willie McGee just went on a Wilt Chamberlain spree across the country. And we just got, you know, there's like his genetics are spread everywhere. I will say this, funny enough, my old school grandfather, lifelong Texan, Durwood had a theory. He always had crazy theories, and he had a theory that my dad always laughed at this, that he thought pigeon-toed people were better athletes. They're like pigeon. If you saw pigeon toe, that was a sign that that guy was a really good athlete.
What did Durwood know one guy when he was a kid who was pigeon toed, who was more athletic than everybody else, and that just stuck with him the rest of his life?
Probably. I can think of some. I just gave Willie McGee. Brandon Belt is a hell of an athlete.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You can pick out individuals because they're so few and far between.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I know. I don't think that's something that NFL scouts are looking for now. Durwood was trying to get in front of Gilbrant, but he got beat out.
Oh, man. So, yeah, Field Day brought that revelation to light. And I was at a math competition for my daughter over the weekend, the Mathlympics. And I saw some blatant cheating happening at the Mathlympics, which was just really sad. But parents were choosing to sit next to their kids when they were supposed to be game monitors and not have anything to do with their kids or the school that their kid came from. And actually had to call it out at one point because one such scenario is playing out against my kid where there was a parent from this kid's school. I don't know if it was actually the mom of the kid that she was playing against. But she was like very blatantly helping this kid out. And I'm like, hold on here. This is not okay. So I was a rat. I informed, or I had Justine inform the proper authorities, and they went and they switched game monitors, and Vivi ended up winning that game, so we were none the wiser, I guess.
Wow. I mean, that's hardcore. That does seem to be different. You know, it's funny, like my parents' generation, they would just drop you off at the game. I think my grandfather went to one of my dad's high school football games, like one of them. And he was a great dad. It just was that era. It's like, you know, good luck, kid. Go get them. And then our generation, it got more where parents were definitely getting involved. Hey, let's get those bike shorts that look like panties and wear those, you know, with a big baseball cap that's never been folded. And so they started getting more involved. And I thought it was bad then. And now I hear about all these stories. I mean, I've got a majority of my friends are around my age in their mid-40s and have kids. And, you know, I mean, I feel like whether I'm talking to you or Trampy or Evan or hell, almost all of y'all, you're always at some sporting event. And I think that y'all are probably pretty good parents, but some of the stories I hear about the involvement of the parents and really the passion, how much they care if the team wins. I would be rooting for my kid to do well and for the team to lose some. Just a bit of a little character. I don't want my kid going undefeated all the way until freshman year in high school. Like, you know, you got to take some L's. I wouldn't mind him to miss a couple free throws to lose a game. Let's get some tears going. Let's build some character early.
I had to give that speech to my third grade girls volleyball team a couple weeks ago because we fell short of our goal of winning a championship. And after the match, I was like, who is upset that we lost? And I raised my hand. I said, it's okay to be upset that you lost. Winning feels better, but losing is important for all these different reasons. So I tried to echo some of what you're talking about there. Yeah, you don't want your kid to win too much because that becomes the entitled kid who tops out in, what, sixth or seventh grade and is just grinding the rest of their lives to try and get back to that feeling. You want your kid to not even really, come to their own at some point in high school or college, but you really don't want them to start peaking until they're into adulthood and they've gone through some of those trials and tribulations. All right, he is Kevin Dunn joining me for the entire hour here on Sports Day Plus. Coming up, one more segment here on the other side.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment for today's show. I am joined for the full hour by my friend Kevin Dunn. Check him out on Twitter at KevinDunn01. And this last segment, we're going to put a little bit more focus on the University of Texas here for at least a few minutes because, Kevin, you have your degree from UT. Well, congratulations. I don't think you realized before the last couple of days that you have an Ivy League education.
Yeah, boy, I have not acquired many things that have appreciated as much as that degree. I mean, I hear all these people saying that you shouldn't go to college. And I think that's a fair argument now with trade schools and everything and how much tuition is. But I'm one of the few people I look back, I'm like, that was a great decision. So I do kind of laugh though. And UT's always been a really good school. It's only gotten better. I can't imagine me applying there now and getting in, but, I do remember some of the people that got in and just thinking, and I knew him from high school and thinking, you got in? Like, holy cow, man, your parents have a lot more money than I thought. And what the hell? I can't believe you're here. I mean, those people are walking around now, barely getting out a full sentence, and they're an Ivy League grad or close to it, bud.
Yes, they are. And Forbes last week came out with their 20 new Ivy League schools, 10 public universities, 10 private universities. And as those of you listening right now can guess, yes, the University of Texas ends up as one of 10 public schools that are looked at as an Ivy League education minus the Ivy League cost. The other schools are UNC Chapel Hill, University of Michigan, University of Maryland, Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, University of Florida. That one's a surprise. Georgia Institute of Technology.
Yeah, actually, Maryland and Florida are a little bit of a surprise. Florida's, you know, always been a good school. It's gotten a lot better. I didn't realize Maryland was that good of a school.
Illinois is a surprise, too.
Yeah, Illinois. I mean, my cousin went there, so maybe I'm biased with that. I never thought it was in the first state school. Like, it was always a really good school. I never thought it was like Michigan or Cal Berkeley or Texas or Virginia. Virginia's in there, right?
Virginia's in there. Wisconsin is in there. A school called Binghamton University in New York is there,
yep,
too.
Are you serious about that?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Binghamton University?
I only because of living in New York, but I never knew. I mean, I only heard it. I almost want to say I heard it like a city. But yeah, I didn't realize it was that good of a school. Damn.
Private schools include Boston College, Carnegie Mellon, Emory University, one of the best research facilities in the entire country and world, Georgetown, Johns Hopkins, Northwestern, Rice, Notre Dame, USC, that's University of Southern California, not South Carolina. Come on.
And hey, thanks for explaining that one. I was a little unsure there if the Gamecocks had slid up that far.
Well, I went to an Ivy League school for 6 years without getting my degree, so it was only natural that I would have to make it clear for all the simps listening right now. And then Vanderbilt is the other private school that made this Forbes list.
All right, that makes sense. I mean, obviously Rice would be in there. Wasn't Southwestern always thought of as a great school, the one in Georgetown?
Yes, it is, but it doesn't make this list. That is looked at as a really good school, though. Actually, my brother's Division III or maybe NAIA college baseball team would play Southwestern every year, and so they would make the trip down here, which made it really easy for us to go see his games versus Jackson, Mississippi, which is where Millsaps was located, which is the school that he pitched for.
That'd be tough. But that just continues to show you just how competitive it's gotten. And you know, this is one of those things that really has trickled down. I mean, there's obviously, there are a lot of serious issues with universities and colleges right now, and the affordability and just how much money they actually have and comparing to what they're charging. I mean, it's definitely a ripoff in many cases. So it wasn't as expensive whenever you and I were going to school, especially if you're going in state, but some of these people that are going out of state and even in state with cost of living, it can just be way too expensive. And I'm not sure you get the value add. Especially if you're not going to really, really use what you're doing. Yeah, if you're going to go be an engineer, you got to get an engineering degree. If you're going to go be a salesperson, you know, then, which essentially a lot of us end up doing, then I'm not sure that is definitely necessary. I think it does help getting into some doors. And I would say the best thing about college is if you really use it to create connections and work on yourself. At 18, it's funny enough, I started working at 15 at KOBJ Radio of all places. But I was not ready at 18. I was too emotionally immature to go deal with the real world. And so I I'm glad that I had college. I needed college for a lot of other reasons than to learn how to talk into a mic, which I'd already been doing for 3 years.
Yeah, it provides a nice buffer in adulthood to where you are starting to have to take care of more stuff on your own, but it's not so serious that it becomes, I don't want to say life and death, because adulthood isn't life and death most of the time, but the circumstances aren't as dire if you make a mistake. And there are people who go to trade school and they make a good living immediately versus going the college route. And sadly, the college route, a lot of times, while it can prove beneficial, it's not always beneficial for the degree necessarily. No. I'm going to have a hard time believing you if you think that you're, I don't know, pick the worthless, your general liberal arts degree or your American studies degree or your psychology degree, assuming that you haven't gone to more school for those things, is doing you much good other than being to check that, being able to check that box that says, yes, I have my college degree from this place.
Yeah. I mean, I think a history degree is cool because I'm fascinated with history. And I mean, that's something I would do when if I was retired. I'd maybe go sneak into a couple classes, history classes, and just sit in, you know. But I mean, that's pretty lame, but that's how much I love history. But a history degree, I mean, what? You just want to see if you can be the biggest asshole at the party? You know, I'm not sure how much that helps you in real life.
Oh, you're so much better off. Take the amount of money that you had to spend on the 4 or 5 years of getting that history degree and use that money to travel to wherever it is that you want to learn about the history of and spend extended time there. That'll give you a real education, and it will probably also open some very interesting doors too at the same time.
Yeah. And by the way, not to get Will Hunting on this, but you can get that for a lot cheaper if you want to go ahead and do that. It's, you know, you can, hell, you don't even need a library pass anymore. There's a lot of other ways to gather all that information. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you can get those degrees and you end up just kind of becoming that person, kind of like the history degree where you're every social event you're at, you know, it's, well, I mean, the Romans actually ended up going over and taking over a lot of Croatia, which is why the Croatian food, it's like, all right. We get it. You know,
I just said I want to go vacation on the Croatian coast. I don't want a history lesson about it right now.
Said, bro. yeah, but no, that is good for UT. It's gotten better and better and better and more competitive. But that, like I said, that's also really trickled down too, to where, I mean, Arkansas is a much better school now than it was 20 years ago when it felt like it was a junior college.
Yeah.
Right. Because they've gotten a lot of really smart Texas kids that just can't get into UT or A&M anymore. Because it's gotten so damn hard. And it's like, well, I don't want to go to Tech. I don't want to go to Baylor. And, you know, or Baylor's too expensive, you know. And a lot of these, like Arkansas, have been very smart. And they're giving state tuition to especially Texas kids. Because they know Dallas is overloaded. There's a population issue. There's only so many kids that can get in. And you throw that in with DEI or some of the other qualifications that may come into how they're accepting kids. Then you end up getting a lot of smart kids or smart enough kids that all of a sudden would never be going to Arkansas or Auburn or Alabama. I'm hearing that all the time. I mean, those were really, really crappy academic schools, and they've all gotten better, and they've gotten better because they're getting the overflow of where these kids would have been going to UT or A&M.
I think that Texas Tech has really benefited in that regard too, getting that spillover from those kids who couldn't get into the other places but don't necessarily want to be breaking the bank to go to a TCU or SMU from the DFW area.
That's the other thing. I think you're exactly right about that. Like my niece, I have a nephew that went to Arkansas, and girlfriend was going there, now his wife, and major work for him. Money was at play. But he wanted to go there, and he loves to ride his bike. And so, I mean, he used the, you know, the funny thing, a lot of Arkansas actually is beautiful. So he would just, you know, he ended up having a good time there. But I have a niece who went to TCU, and there's no way in hell. I mean, my sister and her brother-in-law or Uncle Kev or even Grandbob could have paid for all that or would have paid for all that if my sister didn't work there. So a lot of times there's an easier way. But like TCU, some of these private schools, and you got to really be loaded to, And you can even really be loaded and still say, you know what, it's not worth it. I know people that are worth $50 million and they're not going to go buy some, you know, go buy the newest car because they don't think it's worth it. They have the money to do it, but they're not going to do it. And I think that's where a lot of people are with a lot of institutions, public or private.
Yeah, the jig is up for a lot of schools that people realize it's more of a business model than it is something that's trying hard to foster the education of those students who go there. And that is it for another edition of Trey and KD. Kevin, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
Dude, it always flies by. We will have more energy next week. It's the weather, and it's just kind of been one of those weeks so far. Just been, you know, getting after it. So, but yeah, always fun, buddy.
Humid like Houston or New Orleans or Florida or the Philippines. I will be back tomorrow at 6. That's going to include conversations with Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports, talking college football, and Justin Wells of Inside Texas for a couple segments as well. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.